This podcast is brought to you by the 2011 Gator Bowl, costing Ohio State two national championships so they could lose to Florida.
Menace to society.
It is Tuesday, July 16th. We apologize for the delay for this show. We're in our new studio, though. It's still under construction. We're working on the aesthetics of it. Apologize if there's a little bit of an echo. The soundproofing, what do you call it, materials should be in today or tomorrow. But the set is still a work in progress. New audio equipment coming this week. We actually have video equipment coming this week, and we have no idea what we're doing with that. So don't expect videos this week, like live streaming or anything like that. We're going to play with it in the next week or two, and our plan all along has been sometime in August to launch the video platform. So we're still on pace to do that. Live from Cameron Media is proud to bring you Menace to Society podcast, first show in the studio. Just want to dive into the intro. Just thanks for joining us. We're approaching 250,000 downloads now and listeners in the first, whatever it's been, almost 2 months. And just want to thank you for listening. Thank you for tuning in. Ask you to give us a review on whatever podcast platform you listen to the show on. We have over 800 reviews so far. We want to remain one of the top podcasts on iTunes, Spotify, Google Play, etc. The only way to do that is reviews. Give us 5 stars. Leave us a note. We read everything. Also, if you haven't yet, it's extremely low cost, and we'll give you access to exclusive content minimally a day early. Most of the time, this time today was a caveat, but as well as additional shows, additional segments, information, access. You won't be disappointed. Go to patreon.com/menace2societypodcast and sign up now. Get your priority subscription for all our exclusive content and prioritized questions for our Beyond the Show episodes. I also want to mention we're still working through the sponsorships and advertising partnerships, and that platform is still open and available. Planning on launching that element as preseason rolls around. And the show increases and expands content to cover college football. So if you are interested or have an idea, someone who might be, reach out to us via our website, menace2societypodcast.com, or email us at sponsorship@menace2societypodcast.com. All right, let's dive into it. First segment we want to go through. I thought this would be interesting for people. I know I have received questions about this over the last 15 years and have, you know, told stories and explained it to people. And I want to make sure, I think you guys would enjoy it. So it's a segment we're going to call So You Want to Be a Coach. It is the weekly breakdown of a college football coach, that your average 100-hour work week.
So, 100? It's not 40?
No, definitely not 40. In season, I kind of did the math before we did the segment, and it's around 100 hours, you know, and depending on the week, it could be more, it could be less, but it's right around 100 pretty consistently. And so just take you inside the life of a football coach, starting with Sunday. So Sunday, I figured just a generic week would be the best way to do it. And Sunday, after a game, you got a nice 12-hour day in front of you. So usually as a coach, you'll wake up, have breakfast with your family, get your film graded, and be in the office by around 10 a.m. It's one of the 2 days of the week that you get to come in a little later, probably get to see your kids in the morning. So Sunday's a great day for family. So get your film graded, come in by 10 a.m., and then you're going to review the game as a staff. Go through your players, your grades, you know, how your guys played.
Now, when you say grade the film, what do you mean, really? Like, how does that work?
So you just grade every player on every play, what their job was, and everyone does it a little different. It's kind of a plus or minus system, I guess, where you just, did they do their job or not? It's a yes or no question, right? Gotcha. And then you give them a percentage grade, just like a test. I mean, I know to be a champion, you had to be 85% grade out, and a champion would be, I guess, what you expect from your players. And then you also, outside of just player performance and group performance, you talk about what happened in general, like what happened in the game, what did the defense do, what was our reaction to it, how was our communication. And then you dive into the film. You watch the film as a staff. A lot of times it's going to be with the head coach, especially at Ohio State with Urban being an offensive coach. There was, you know, we'd sit down and watch the whole game with Urban. And then you go through, and it's unbelievable because you meticulously discuss every play. like the play call, the defense, the situation, the issues, potential solutions to the issues if it didn't go well, communication, successes, and breakdowns. You really go through the whole process on every single play. You sit there and watch every play ad nauseum, and you just analyze it. You discuss it. Then usually that's about 10 a.m. to 1 p.m., a good three-hour session, and then you break around 1 to get some stuff done that you need to get done. Like a lot of people dive into the next opponent, maybe watch a little film so you have an idea what you're walking into this next week. And then you get back together maybe an hour or two, or probably about an hour later, and discuss the next opponent. And you have to plan. I know at Ohio State we practiced on Sunday. So we'd play a Saturday game, come back Sunday and practice. And so you put together a short practice plan, usually, and then you probably have a 10-period, what we call a 10-period practice. Each period is a 5-minute segment. There's ways to make them shorter, like a 4-minute period, an 8-minute period. But for the most part, 5-minute periods. You have a good 10-period practice for your team. And after you plan practice, you're going to break, get around your players, check they're in the facility, getting treatment, got a lift in. And then you have chapel with your players and your families if you'd like. Usually we had a former player, which Ohio State has the best, I don't know if we would you call it, a staff of chaplains that I've ever been, of any school I've been to. Florida was all over the place when we were there. Marshall has an awesome one. He's top two, if not the best one I've been around. Temple, we had a couple guys that were decent. But Ohio State has a kind of a conglomeration of a couple former players. Like Roy Hall's phenomenal. I don't know if you know Roy Hall, are familiar with Roy Hall or his Driven Foundation, but he is excellent. So we have chapel. We kind of get a lot of times you don't have time to go to church during football season. So Urban would bring church to us. He would bring some form of chapel to the players, to the coaches. And you'd get that in before you got started. And then you have meetings. You watch the film with your players. You start with special teams meetings and position meetings. And you watch the film for about an hour and a half with your players and just go through, again, every play with them, coach them up, get corrections, praise where praise is deserved. And then go hit the practice field. Like I said, a 10-period practice. Before you get out there, as a staff, you want to discuss the efficiency of practice. Really, what we're going to get done. It's very, very detailed. And the practice at college football, at big-time college football, is very different than most I've been to. There's some great high school practices I've been to that are similar, but it's very efficient. I mean, guys are flying around moving. You're drill to drill. It's never, ever a dull moment. And the energy is outrageous. I mean, it's phenomenal. I mean, there's huge speakers, a sound system, music playing. Guys are jumping around. I mean, guys get excited for it. So you roll out for practice. That's all going on. Get some energy going. Get guys moving. Get their blood flowing. And then you go to pre-practice. And pre-practice for us was always a good 10, 15-minute segment of skill development. Or it really whatever you want it to be as a coach. But you had it. That was before you got stretched. Before you got going, you could do some. I know at receiver, we did some jugs work. We did some tennis ball work. We did a couple, maybe a drill, a release drill. Something that you didn't need to be warm for. But you could kind of slow it down and really teach. And it was critical. We did it every practice. It was awesome. And then you go out and get it. I mean, you go through practice and we did some scout work to kind of go through corrections from the game and get live reps at correcting those issues, do some 7-on-7, which is like a passing drill. And then the best part of Sunday was post-practice. Post-practice, Urban used to always, and Coach Mick would call the team up, kind of let the guys go that played in the game. He'd always say, for the veterans, the guys that played, if you played over 20 plays, you're out of here. Go get your stretch in, get some woosah in, get a shower, and we'll meet you in there in a minute. And the young kids got to stay out for a good 45-minute scrimmage. And people would say, I had visiting coaches come in, and they'd say, you scrimmage the day after a game? And Urban would always say, yeah, the young kids scrimmage. Because they didn't do shit for 72 hours while the guys that played laid it all out there. You figure Thursday practice, after that, those kids didn't do anything. They showed up to the stadium and watched a game, right?
Yep.
So they had 72 hours off, so we're going to get a scrimmage in, kind of do some young player development. And then after that practice, which happened over 90 times in my time at Ohio State, we had what was called victory meal. victory meal was just a team dinner after practice. And on the frequent occasion that it was a victory meal, it was, I mean, carte blanche. It was crab legs, lasagna, steak, you name it. I mean, you name a good food, we had it at some point. Scallops, all of it. And, I mean, it was a spread that, man, you look forward to that one. And Urban used to always say, victory meal, what's for dinner, Mick? And Coach Mick would say, it doesn't matter. The food tastes better. Everything tastes better when you after win.
W.
You could give me a wheat grilled cheese, and it would taste amazing after a win. So that happens. You kind of wrap up probably about, that's probably about 8 o'clock by the time everything's done and players are out of there. And then you get back together as a staff and usually throw on a game of the opponent coming up. I watch one game, kind of go through it just to get a preview. So when you walk in Monday morning, you're fresh and ready to go for your next opponent and get out of there about 10 p.m. We usually got out of there 10:30 almost every night, other than the few nights I'll tell you that we got out of there a little earlier. But that was kind of our cutoff. You know, you hear horror stories of people staying in the office till 1 in the morning, 2 in the morning, just grinding. And Urban's whole thing was he wants a fresh coaching staff. He wants to get out of there at 10 o'clock, 10:30, let you go home, go to sleep, get up, get in early, and get rolling. So that was Sunday. Sunday's a fun day.
Well, you said that the energy for Sunday practice is really up and, you know, after a win, though. But does that change after a loss?
Oh, absolutely.
I'm guessing, right?
Yeah, I mean, after a loss, a lot of times you have a salty and pissed off team.
Yeah.
And like I said, it happened, what, I think a handful of times.
Seven.
Yeah, when I was at Ohio State. And so, yeah, it the energy is very different, obviously, win or loss. But it's always about getting work in. And I'd say the most therapeutic thing about Sunday practice after a loss is you get back out on the field. You get moving. You move mm-hmm. on. It helps with the process of getting over that loss.
Well, what's the meal like after a loss?
They still have food, but it's not as
it's not lobster.
Yeah, it's not real nice.
Yeah.
So that's Sunday. Then Monday you roll in. So Monday we gave our players off. They have the day off. I say the day off. They never have a day off. But they it was their day for academia and really to have a full day to focus on getting their week started, get their tutoring and everything scheduled, make sure they knock out what they need to knock out for the week. And, I mean, they would stop in, but it was very informal, and it was really their day. And it was also our day as a coaching staff to prepare. We had a full 24 to just sit there and grind and prepare for the upcoming game. So you usually get in around 6 a.m. The official start time every day outside of Friday was 7 a.m. So you usually get in about an hour early, kind of get some preview work done, get whatever you need to get done. And so you get in the morning, you break apart and study your opponent. So every coach has its specific responsibility. And from about 7 to 10, you're really studying that responsibility. It may be first and second down at certain formations, third down, red zone, doesn't matter what it is. You studied your little piece of the pie. So then you get together about 10 and talk about overall analysis of the team you're playing, what you saw, compare notes with each other, thoughts on what, you know, what we could do, what our plan would be. And then it's usually about a two-hour window there where you just discuss kind of generalities and maybe get started on some first and second down stuff. And then at noon, you break as a staff. Guys will work out, grab lunch, players start popping in. So you might grab a couple of your players and go through what you've already talked about and what you saw and kind of direct them for their own self-study for the week. And then after that, usually head coach has some form of press conference, interview, whatever, and after that is when you'll dive back in. Around 1:30-ish probably, reconvene, grind through formations. You go formation. So how you line up on offense, your formation, someone has already assigned that formation. And so they have a very detailed breakdown of what a team does to defend that formation or alignment. So you get together at 1:30 and you just grind through each formation that you use and any special formations you saw that might give them an issue or whatever. You just work through first and second down. First and second down is 80% of snaps, so it's the most important part of your game plan. And then go formation by formation. Talk about what they do, tendencies. Also, self-scout. You'll have each coach that's assigned a formation will go through and say, all right, here's what we've done when we line up like this. Here's every play. Here's what they saw on film and what they're defending. And so we would try to always break tendencies, especially strong tendencies. So you'd go through and you'd say, oh, man, when we line up in this formation, we have a lot of weak side run with Ezekiel Elliott. Say, all right, well, this week, let's try to put some strong side run in and play action pass, fake the weak side run, and throw a play action, right? You're trying to play up these on these tendencies to work them to your advantage. So you grind through that all day Monday, and you, really you work through dinner. They'll cater dinner in for the coaches. Pretty much all meals are catered in for the coaches. I mean, they're for the players and coaches, but there's training table. All meals catered to the Woody Hayes Athletic Center. And so you go grab a plate, go back in the staff room, and just grind through dinner. And usually you break up after dinner for maybe 6 to 7, 6 to 8, 6:30 to 8:30, somewhere around there to work on your situations apart. A lot of times, like myself and Ryan Day would get together and talk about some third down thoughts. Or, you know, you just kind of try to work ahead a little bit. And, yeah, you do that in the evening. And then usually you'll come back from 7 to 10 and try to finish the first and second down game plan. You want to walk out the door at 10 o'clock with at least your preliminary game plan for first and second down. So that's Monday. Now you have the game plan, I guess, rough draft set for first and second down, which is, like I said before, the most important situation. So you roll in Tuesday, about the same time, 6 a.m., official starts 7. And I know on Tuesday we did this. I don't know what other, if all programs do something like this, but at 7 a.m. we usually had, on Tuesdays, we had a staff Bible study. We had the guys from AFCA come in, and we did a good 30-minute Bible study. And each year was a different theme. It could be a different book of the Bible. It could be a different character, not character, I guess, a person. Well, that's politically incorrect character. Or whatever. So it would be, they would take a person in the Bible and study him for a year or her, or you'd take a book and study that book for a year. So every year was different. It was really a really beneficial time to kind of, give you perspective and get your mind right. So then 7:30 rolls around, you got your Bible study in, kind of your soul refreshed, and you're going to dive back into the staff room and review the entire plan that you spent 16 hours on the day before. Just play by play. Usually, whatever coach is in charge of that formation will go through and say, all right, here's the issues, major issues for each play that could happen and what our answer would be. It could be a field blitz, like a blitz from the wide side of the field, a blitz from the short side of the field, an internal blitz, an all-out blitz, whatever. You go through every possible scenario, and you work through all the different checks and adjustments for every issue. Kind of grind through that, and it really that takes up pretty much your whole morning. And then from about 11 to 12, you might preview situational plans, third down, maybe add a unique package, a trick play, wildcat, whatever. And you really want to be done by noon so you can grab lunch, and then you have to script practice. So when you go to these practices, every single play is scripted. Every single play is written down versus the specific look, specific defense. So at the end of the week, you can say, all right, we ran this play against these four looks, and we got to get this other look for the quarterback or for this receiver or whatever. So, yeah, you do that, and you're going to prepare for your meetings. Meetings usually start at about 2 or 2:10. We always started with special teams meetings, you know, kickoff, punt, whatever, for the day. And then you break up position meeting. You grab your players, you go in your office or your meeting room, and you present to them the plan. And obviously it's got to be well prepared. You want to show them some video clips of the team you're playing as you discuss your plan and what you want them to do to execute. And then you, about 3:20, 3:30, you break. Get ready to take the field. Guys go get taped, their ankles taped, and roll out to practice. And go through the same it's usually a different, but that same pre-practice window. Then you do dynamic warm-up. I don't know if people are familiar with dynamic warm-up, but we did everything we did was moving around. There was very, very rarely did you see, all right, everyone straight leg, touch your toe. All right, do shoulder circles or whatever. There was some of that built into our dynamic warm-up, but a lot of it was about breaking a sweat and warming those muscles up. The one thing I will say is, like 2014, we had zero soft tissue injuries the entire year, which is wild. We had the same offensive line game one that we had game 14.
That's incredible.
Incredible. And it's a test. It really is part of the reason why we won it. Yeah. And it's a testament to Mickey Marotti and the research he's done, the stuff he's put in to place with hydration. So it's wild. Like, these players will come in and they get pissed. What else you call it? It's a urine hydration test, I guess would be an official way to call it. And it really is just, they come in, they pee in a cup. They have these little hydration sticks with this little machine, and they test their hydration level. and they are not allowed to go on the field unless they have a single-digit hydration level. And that's the lower the better. Obviously, like a one means you're peeing almost straight water. Mm-hmm. Because so much research has been put into the fact that you pull hamstrings, you tweak a hip flexor, or you get a concussion because of dehydration. So parents, if you have kids that do sports, I would recommend making sure they're very hydrated. Make them force down Gatorade or Body Armor or whatever. So they're hydrated, because concussions and soft tissue injuries are mainly hydration related. So you do that. And then when we go out pre-practice, a lot of guys, they get stretched out. A lot of strength coach may stretch them out, partner stretches. They might get rolled, you know, their hamstrings rolled out with those rollers, foam rollers, things like that. They get their body ready. Their body is such an asset in college football. They got to get their body ready. And so then Tuesday, we'll dive into a full padded practice. It's the one full padded practice of the week. About 4:15, you get rolling. You got a good 2 hours, 2.5 hour practice where it's Urban used to call it Bloody Tuesday. I mean, it's a brutal day, and it's you're throwing all kinds of shit at them, all kinds of defensive situations that are just uncomfortable, and you're really trying to break them down so that you can build them back up, you know, through the later parts of the week to get them on cloud nine so they're walking with confidence before the game. So you go through practice, you know, there's all kinds of different segments. There's brutal, what's called inside drills. I don't know if you heard of inside drills, but it's like, you know, it's like just the offensive line, running backs and quarterback and tight ends against the D-line and linebackers. Defensive coaches always try to...
That's the fun one.
Yeah, defensive coaches always try to sneak an extra safety in there. Like, they don't have to cover any receivers, but...
That's fair.
But it's all run game. It's all, I mean, in your face, smash mouth, just getting after it. And it's an intense drill that, obviously, as that's going on, receivers are doing one-on-ones and 7-on-7 after, and it's a very different world that I lived than the O-line coach lived.
I bet the defense loves that drill.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, the offense does, too, if they're kicking that ass.
True.
So, anyway, 6:30-ish, practice ends. A lot of times after practice, like the support staff in college football is outrageous now. I mean, it's awesome. It's really good, but I mean, it's, you know how they say, I used to walk 10 miles in the snow uphill to school and home, like things like that. Like back when I was a GA, there was two GAs here on offense, go. Two GAs on defense. That was it. There was no interns, none of that. And now I remember I'd walk into Ohio State, I'd be like, my God, we had a staff room table that we sat at, and then the exterior perimeter of the room was just lined with chairs for support staff.
So now interns have interns.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
interns.
It's wild. But, yeah, so the support staff would usually go grab a box dinner from the training table and bring it to you, because you had to dive right in. I mean, you go quick shower, straight in the staff room, and you're going to go watch practice. And you try to knock out the entire practice from about 7 till about 10:30. You're just going to grind through every play of practice. You're going to watch it all, talk about it all, discuss how it looked, what you thought against the defense, whatever. You just go through every detail of the play.
And that's why you script the play, so then you have it on film, everything you want to see.
Yeah, right. And at the end of the week, you'll say, all right, let's say we're running this, I don't know, whatever you want to call it, a counter run play to Ezekiel Elliott out of this formation. At the end of the week, you'll look at it and say, all right, these are the four defenses we repped it against this week. And now, that's when you'll catch, you'll say, shit, we didn't put a boundary blitz into that. Yep. So you script it on Thursday to get a look at it, you know, to make sure they have experienced that situation. So when the game comes, they're prepared. They already did it. And it's impossible to cover every scenario, but man, it's thorough. You really try.
Well, now the software that they have to get that on there, like what you want, you just click a button and it goes right to it, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, you
you just say, I want a 4-4 defense or 4-3.
Yeah, I mean, the video software is unbelievable what they can do. Now, it's still actually behind the times, though, if you compared it to any other industry like accounting.
Really?
Oh, yeah. But I mean, there's a market for that, but it's definitely much improved in the last 10 years, where you can get a lot of things. But I'm just, it'll come a point where Microsoft or someone makes a video editing program and it'll just, everything else will be obsolete.
Yeah, right.
But that's Tuesday. Tuesday, now you got your physical work in. Tuesday, your first second down game plan is been put through the ringer. So you roll in Wednesday around 6 a.m. Like I said, official start time 7. And then usually about 7 a.m., you go through the entire plan again. Like, it's just like start over. All right, go through each play, entire plan, clean it all up, make it airtight. Try to get it absolutely crisp. And then 9 a.m. usually roll around and you have a full staff meeting. It's kind of a midpoint of the week. You get together and that's where you dive into the stuff you have not thought about or done for 2 days, right? You mm-hmm. really, Wednesday morning meeting is a, mainly a recruiting week, recruiting meeting to go through the board, talk about recruits, make sure you've been communicating with them. And you really go position by position and see where you're at.
Yeah, I guess you can't just forget about recruiting.
No, recruiting is a 24/7 job.
Yeah.
You got to do it on vacation. You got to do it during season when you're busy. I've done it during games. You got to do it. You got to really, eat, sleep, breathe recruiting. And so 9 a.m. you roll a staff meeting, kind of just general thoughts. Urban would talk to the staff and. And you dive into recruiting and kind of knock that out, and usually you're done. It was supposed to be an hour on paper. There was rarely under 2 hours. So from 9 to 11, you're in the staff meeting. Then you get out of the staff meeting, and now you're kind of, back against the wall. You really are time crunched to grind out your game plan for all the situational things that come up in football. The big four or third down, you need to have a great third down game plan. A fourth down game plan if you need it. Obviously, the second one that's huge is a red zone game plan. A red zone, when you get down close to the end zone, defenses change completely.
So you skip the fourth down when you're playing Rutgers.
I mean, no, you never. The fourth down game plan doesn't change a whole lot.
Yeah.
Because they're going to probably blitz the shit out of you. You usually have your core plays that are good against everything to go get you 2 yards on fourth and one, right? Mm-hmm. Yep. Like the JT Barrett run against Michigan.
I remember that one.
This short or not. Oh, the debates. So you third down red zone were the big things. Those were two of my responsibilities in my career. Obviously very pass friendly or pass happy situations. And you also short yardage and goal line. So when it's third and one, what play are you running? Because they're going to do things to try to stop you from getting 1 yard, and you're going to do things to hopefully get 2 yards. And got to grind out that game plan. So you work through those game plans. Usually skip lunch, work through lunch, finalize those, and then script practice again, just like Tuesday. Wednesday practice is very similar to Tuesday's practice. Now the players don't wear pads on the bottom half. They wear just uppers, they call it. So just shoulder pads and helmets. And then they always wear thigh pads just for any, incidental or accidental knee to the thigh, a thigh bruise. And I laugh because they're not thigh pads. I don't know if you watch football, but back in the day, they used to be big, hunky, hunky thigh pads. And now they're like this little tiny plastic shell. I mean, it doesn't even exist, but they wear them, hip pads and thigh pads. So you go through practice again, 2 o'clock meetings start, and you go through the whole gamut again, kicking, position, all that pre-practice dynamic. You go to practice. The good thing about Wednesday for a coach is Wednesday after practice, we went home. We went home about 7:30. And usually the design was you go home and that's when you make all your recruiting calls. Wednesday and Thursday night, you go home, have dinner with your family, and then you just sit there on the phone all night. Calling recruits, calling coaches, kind of get caught back up and reestablish contact with those kids that maybe you hadn't talked to in 2 days. And so you just grind that out all Wednesday evening. A lot of times you'll watch some of the practice on your own at home from your iPad or whatever. And then it's really a recruiting day. And then Thursday morning you roll in, again, same thing, another 12-hour day in front of you. Roll in around 6, official start time 7, and the minute you get in, 7 a.m., you start. That clicker's rolling, and you're watching Wednesday's practice because you haven't got to watch it yet. So you grind through practice. You'll probably get about 75% of the way done in 2 hours, and then at 9 o'clock, you have another staff meeting. And that's when we did academics. And here's how it works in college athletics. The academic meetings and academic support is so detailed and thorough that you sit down in a 9 a.m. staff meeting, you're going to go through every single player on the team, how they're doing, what they've done since in the past 7 days, what they have coming up, any issues, missing a class, missing a tutor, whatever, so you can dive into them. And I mean, just correct any issues and really know what's going on with them. So you can, right before meetings on Thursday, you can grab Paris Campbell and say, hey, Paris, you got a big biology test on Friday. You ready for it? You can stay in tune with what else they have going on because these are not NFL athletes. They have a lot of shit going on. They have a lot of academic responsibilities. They have a lot of so many things going on in their world. And it'll be cool to bring a player on and talk about the life of a football player, because it is very intense, especially in season. So you dive through that. You go through that at 9 a.m., have that staff meeting, go through all academics, and then obviously after that's done, you'll dive, update where you're at with the game plan, what it looks like for the game. And then after the staff meeting, you really finish practice film, and you really go through again, ad nauseum, the entire plan now. The situational plan, first and second down plan, any issues that have come up, you really quality control the game plan, meaning you go through the game plan and what we talked about earlier. You go through and say, all right, we have not seen this play against this defense that they run. We have to get that today, because Thursday's your last day to get a live rep, right? So you really discuss that, go through it, and you got to make sure it's like complete paranoia to make sure that your player is put in a position to succeed on Saturday. And that's your job through the week, is give him the look that he might see on Saturday. So when he sees it, he's already repped it. He's already went against it. He's already done it. And so now he can go out and execute at a high level. Thursday is also what we call perfect Thursdays. And that means that you're not going to go against, like, the first team offense is not going to go against the first team defense or the second team defense on Thursday. You're going entirely against a scout team or a look team or, the younger players or walk-ons or whoever that are going to give you a look. And you're going to – the expectation is no balls on the ground and no do-overs, right? Mm-hmm. What they call bingos. No callbacks, no bingos. So you're going to go through and try to rep every play, and you get about 100 plays in on Thursday. You want to go 100 for 100. And some of the great games that I've been a part of, that happened. Like going it before Alabama, perfect Thursday. Oh my gosh. It was insane. I mean, it was just players flying around, execution at the highest I've ever seen it. Just every pass was completed. Every ball was high and tight, tucked, great ball security, crisp routes, crisp execution. And that's what you look for, especially before a big time game. So you go through perfect Thursdays, and you really try to make sure that game plan looks like you wanted it to look. It's like you dreamt it into reality, right? On Monday, you had all these concepts on a whiteboard with black Expo markers. And then on Thursday, you get to watch it live and in person. This is also the infamous practice that I discussed where Ed Warner would delete plays that weren't perfect because Urban was insane about it being a perfect Thursday. So if a play was not perfect, he would throw it out. He'd say, we have plenty of good plays. Get it out. They're not ready to execute it. And it was what's called competitive excellence. So you do something so many times, right, that the success of you doing that is almost second nature. So you are at competitive excellence. You are at that point where you are going to make that play because you've done it 100 times in preseason camp, in the offseason. You've executed that skill that many times. It's where preparation meets success, right? And so that was Thursday. And after Thursday, again, players got out of there. Coaches got out of there. More recruiting calls that evening. And really, you're prepping for Friday. Because Friday and Saturday are the two. I mean, you talk about, not that the process isn't fun. And if you don't love the process, then you're probably not in the right field or line of work. But Friday and Saturday are like, that's like Christmas. Friday, because it's there's no physical work really, and it's all mental preparation, motivation. It's awesome. Friday was my favorite day. Game day's awesome, but Friday was really, it's really where you got your guys ready, you know? And so Urban's program, and at Ohio State, it was called the Best Fridays in Football, and it was really cool. So for a home game, obviously away games, you had to come in early and the whole, get ready because you had to travel to account for. But home games was awesome. It was take your kids to school day. You didn't have to come in until 10 a.m. So you get to wake up with your kids, make them breakfast, take them to school, drop them off, whatever. Whatever you wanted to do with your family before you came in. And most guys come in around 9, more realistically, depending on what time kids get dropped off at school or whatever. So you come in and then you sit down and grind it out, man. Start watching Thursday's perfect practice and discuss any issues that came up. If your team's cooking, it's an easy meeting. I mean, you just go through and as a coach, it builds confidence. You're like, man, we look good. We're on it. Like, we're executing at a high level. And so you watch practice. And if an issue did occur, a mentor, God forbid, or just a lack of execution, it was an absolute explosion. You're probably throwing the play out. You probably don't need it. Probably not going to. And Urban used to say, he said, I'm not letting you call that play. It looks like shit. So you can keep it in if you want, but I'm not letting you call it. So that was his way of saying throw it out. And then that was probably about 10 a.m. to noon. So 2 hours, knock that practice film out, and then it's complete preparation mode as a coach. You got to get ready for Friday meetings. Friday meetings, I mean, you would do tip sheets, and I would always do tip sheets and a test, and the test would kind of quiz them on some new plays or some things that we discussed all week, just to kind of a refresher. I never collected the tests that I gave out. I would make sure they did them. But ultimately, if you have to grade a test on a Friday before a game, that player's probably not going to do what he's supposed to do. Right. So, and then also, it was a big motivation weekend. So for Patreon members, I'm going to put out one of my favorite videos that we had done. And my guy was Keenan Bailey. He really got it done with our creativity department. And it just... Every week was something different, you know, some way to motivate them, some way to get them their blood cooking and get them locked into the final 24 hours of preparation. And I think it was Nebraska was the game that I'm going to put on Patreon. But the stuff that they put out was phenomenal. And so you can see the stuff they put out publicly, but the in-house motivational tools that the creativity people do at that level of college football is unbelievable. I mean, it rivals Nike or any of those corporations.
Yeah, I used to love it because you used to text them to me.
Oh, yeah.
The videos, and I'd be like, damn, I'm going to run through a wall.
Yeah, they were unbelievable. So I'm going to put this, hopefully today, I got to go dig and find it. But if not today, tomorrow for sure, for Patreon subscribers, I'm going to put out one example of a Friday meeting motivational video that I showed my players. And, you know, one of the other cool things I did with as a part of the test was I made my players go, the question was this, if you were not to play for whatever reason, who do you trust to execute and make a play to win the game in order in this room? Because then they would have to go through and say, all right, well, if it's the last play of the game, yeah, I definitely want the ball to go to Michael Thomas. That's number one. All right, who's number two? Yeah, definitely Evan Spencer. Right, they would just go through, and then it was telling. It was so telling because all it really did was reaffirm as a coach like what you already thought, but it just showed. All right, they see it too. They see that this kid might be number 10 on the list. And that's what I think, but the players see it too, and who's number one? And it gave you absolutely amazing ammunition for a conversation with a kid. He'd say, "Why don't I play more?" You could say, "Well, your own teammates don't trust you to make the play. You expect me to?"
Right.
It was awesome. And it also would be a complete testament to why you threw it to Mike 15 times or 10 times. Because you're like, well, look, even his peers see that he's the most accountable and best player in this room. So it was really cool. So then you, after all that meeting, motivation, all of that, then you go to pre-Friday walkthrough. And this is part of Best Fridays in Football. We'd go out and there'd be a 15-minute period where the players got to just screw around. And the thought behind it was you got to get them to be loose. You can't be like uptight and rigid the whole time or else you're going to be on edge and nervous for the game. So we'd go out and like the receivers we always played, I guess it would be like trash can basketball, right, with a football. So two big trash cans, you were allowed 2 steps. And then you had to pass it or shoot it or whatever. And it was probably the most competitive thing that happened that week. I'm not kidding you. And I might post, I think all I have is low lights, like me getting dunked on and stuff like that. But I might post that on Patreon too. Maybe I won't. I don't know if I want.
I'd like to see it.
I don't know if I want anyone to see that. I mean, there were some epic posterizations of Coach Smith from, I'll tell you who was the worst was Ben Victor. Jesus, man, he's 6'4", like 7 foot wingspan. He would jump, and the trash can's on the ground now, but he would jump to dunk, and I would be looking up like, my God, it was like a freaking pterodactyl coming down to dunk on me. It was unbelievable. But so that was a lot of fun. We played basketball. Like I said, the running backs and quarterbacks always played like a backyard football game. The O-line, oh my God, the O-line was unbelievable. They would play football dodgeball. Like as hard as they could throw footballs at each other and just try to like hit people in the face, like break noses. They were brutal.
Speaking of that, did you ever get any injuries from this?
So one time there, at Florida, we had an injury. I can't remember who it was, but either way, it was a dislocated finger. Only once.
Oh, well, that's not bad.
And Mick and Urban used to get nervous about my game because the basketball game was it was so intense that like you were worried about an injury. Now, the good thing is you have great athletes that are good kids and good players. They're going to be competitive but safely.
Yeah, right? They're not stupid. No. They know they can't get injured.
Right. And so that was a way to kind of get that out of your system, kind of hit reset and then lock back in for a walkthrough. So you did all that, and Urban, you say it all the time, that the greatest quality in an elite athlete is that ability to have fun and then zoom, lock in, and then have fun and zoom, lock in. And so we go through a Friday walkthrough, and that's really where you hit those situational plays you don't get to during the week and only practiced in training camp. Things like last play of the game if you're on your own 20, you know, those hook and ladders, or maybe you need 5 yards and the clock to stop for a field goal to get it a little bit closer, or 4th and 14, the clock's running, no timeouts. You just got to go run a play right now to try to get the first down, which we called chains. Things like that. Just those situational things that you don't really get. You hit them in training camp. They're very unlikely, but you got to get a rep of them just so that if it happens, you're prepared. There's endless number of debacles in the history of college football, especially recent history, where you could tell a team didn't prepare for a situation. And that's where Greg Schiano was unbelievable. He had a presentation on all the situations of college football, things that came up in his career, and he would present it every year, or I guess the 2 years that I was with him, to the staff, just to get your mind thinking, because, you know, there's things that come up and you're like, wow, I never thought about that. We would have looked like an idiot if we didn't cover that. You know what I mean? So it's very very intense checks and balances system. So yeah, after that, you walk through the final game plan, give them a specific player, a specific look that maybe they needed. And or we just need to run it one more time to make sure it's ready for shined up and ready to execute. And then everybody showers, loads up, and goes for team dinner, Friday night dinner at Ohio State. We did it at the golf course overlooking the 18th green over the Scarlet course. Is unbelievable aesthetics and setup, and the food was great. Again, steak and spaghetti and lasagna and, you know, all the typical pregame meal stuff. Then you go to the hotel. At the hotel on Friday night, there was to be no meetings, no walkthroughs. It was simply let them relax and stay loose. I know I always went to the hotel. I always stayed in the hotel the night before the game. And we would always play cards, play spades. Spades was a big game. They would play spades. The Friday night game would be on. People would watch that. There was a movie in one room. People could watch a movie. But the really cool thing to watch was players getting ready to play a game. They would go and just get treatment, massages, acupuncture, leg compressions, smoothies, snacks, Epsom salt baths. I mean, they would sit there and just, it was all about, all right, what do I need to fuel my body and get my body ready to play? So that was the week, Sunday through Friday, and then game day happened, right? Game day, it was the circus of circuses. you always wanted to wake them up. I think 9 a.m. was the latest we woke them up for a night game, maybe 10 a.m. if it was a late game. And that was my favorite thing, was to wake the players up Saturday morning. We'd go through the hotel screaming, hollering. And if it's an early game, it's like 7 a.m. And, you know, these are team hotels. This is right by the stadium. So, you know, it's all fans that are staying there for the game. So we would pound on the door, screaming, yelling, waking up the players. The whole hotel would wake up. People would come out of their room, rubbing their eyes, like getting the sleepy gunk out of their eyes. Like, what is going on?
What the hell is happening?
Like, yeah, like they just stormed Normandy or something. What is going on out there? And so I always had this thing with my players. They would have a newspaper at every door for the players and 2 orange juices. So I'd always pound the door. They'd wake up like kind of, you know, hair messed up and open the door. I'd throw the orange juices at them, push them, get them going. And then I would always have pick like the most random story that I found in the newspaper. Like man gets arrested for defecating on sidewalk.
Florida man.
Yeah,
probably.
Florida man, yeah, for sure. And so I would go and I'd be like, no, listen to this. Look at this. You won't believe this shit. Look at this. This guy is not going to watch the game because he took a dump on the sidewalk. So wake up, man. We got to go. And then I'd walk out and they'd be like, what just happened? But it was awesome. And so you always go down and get a team walk in. You'd go for a walk, maybe like a quarter mile walk, just get guys moving around, get their blood flowing. And then you dive right into meetings. You go to I don't even want to say meetings. They were walkthroughs. Guys are moving around, active. And now all that fun slap happiness is gone. Now it's complete silence, complete focus, laser light focus. And guys are locked in. Their assignments, their responsibilities, they're getting mentally ready to perform. So we go do a special teams meeting. go through every special teams phase, every single call, every scenario, and it was like militaristic. It was sequential. It was bang, bang, move on, bang, bang, move on. It was awesome. So you'd walk out of that, you go to breakfast. Breakfast, we would put on game day. You'd have that going on in the background, but it was minimal talking. I mean, you were allowed to talk. It wasn't like anything where you had to be uptight, but it was a focused football team. So you'd eat breakfast. Everyone had their routines, what they ate, what they did. Very, very, very systematic and routine. That was the big, big thing.
Well, I think a lot of athletes are very superstitious as it is.
Yeah, it's superstition, but even more than superstition, I think, is routine.
Routine, yeah.
Having a routine, a daily routine, a weekly routine, a game day routine. Those things that the best players I saw, the Michael Thomases of the world, they had a very strict routine. I mean, on Monday, Michael Thomas did X, Y, and Z every Monday. Mm-hmm. Because it was just what he did. And we talked about it a lot in the development of an athlete is developing that routine. And that was your job as a coach, to help a kid develop his own personal routine so that he was operating at maximum level, at optimal level, right? So you'd have breakfast, and then you go do an offensive defense walkthrough. If it was halfway decent out, we'd always go outside to get some fresh air, move around, kind of get out of the hotel, and you go for about an hour walkthrough, just walking through the same game plan you've worked all week. And then you let them go back up to their rooms. Depending on game time, how long that period was, you'd let them go up there, maybe catch a nap. There was always a snack room with peanut butter and jellies and stuff like that. So you'd let them go do that and kind of get away from you. Get off their feet, relax. And then you bring them back down, have another quick walkthrough, and then go to team dinner. It was always the same. With grilled chicken, spaghetti with meat sauce, potatoes, veggies, and they'd take salt pills. This is my favorite thing. My player specifically, because receiver. That's why they always be like, oh, these are mind control pills. Like, I'm not taking these pills. Like, this is like the Matrix, the blue pill or red pill. So they'd give them salt pills, and these were sodium pills that you take to help water retention so you wouldn't dehydrate.
Don't dehydrate, yeah.
And so early in my career, they did not want to take these pills. And I'll never forget one time, like, they had these, like, because the strength coaches come around and check, like, take your pills, like, make sure you took them. And they would always find, like, these most bizarre way to, like, hide them or not take them. And I remember one time we had a pregame meal, and I didn't even know they weren't taking them at this point. But they all had, like, tossed them under the table, like tablecloth. And so we go to do, and for whatever reason that week, something happened in the walkthrough room. Like, something happened, the lights didn't work or something. So, like, oh, we gotta take all these tables out of the way and walk through here. They picked my position group's table up, and there was like 20 salt pills on the ground. And I was looking at them like, you sons of bitches.
You're screwed.
I was like, are you? I mean, it was like busted.
Yeah.
But it was really funny. So they had to take salt pills. And then we always did a toast at Ohio State, which is from the 2012 Michigan State game. Urban's talked about it several times. It was like a toast, kind of just like saying, we're ready. We're committed. We're all in. Let's go get this game. Right. And he always ended it with and what's fun, the players used to always joke in the locker room, like not around Urban, that the exact time of the original toast would always change. Because Urban would bring it up, he would be like, on October 3rd at 11 a.m., a team came together. And then like 2 weeks later, he'd be like, on October 4th at 3 p.m., a team came, and the players caught on to it. And like, they'd be like, I thought it was at 11. Like, what happened to that?
But did you do it twice?
Right. But it was really cool. It was really a cool moment in the 2012 season because it really was something that the players and Urban and staff clung on to for that epic, I guess, 24-0 run that started it. And he always ended it with, there's a famous battle cry at this great university that we will toast to today. It goes something like this. Our honor defend. We will fight to the end for this great university, for our families, but most importantly, for each other. Hear, hear, and everyone would cling e-glasses and chug a glass of water. And then you head up to the room for dress A. Dress A was your Sunday's best, right? Suit and tie, get suited and booted, and head down for the highlight video and Urban's kind of first pregame talk. And then at Ohio State has cool traditions, man. And you go through the Buckeye walk, through all the fans, into the old basketball gym, right? Which is called the Skull Session. It's a must-see for Buckeye fans.
Skull Session is awesome.
Oh, if you go to if there's a night game against a big-time opponent, you need to go to the Skull Session. It's awesome. And then you leave the Skull Session, enter the horseshoe, and then you let the players get ready to play. Warm-ups are very positionally, like guys will go out and get warmed up, but most of the warm-up happens inside the locker room as far as stretching and stuff like that. And you go out, kind of work some quarterback receiver stuff, throw some balls, catch some balls, just make sure your chemistry is on point. And then you go back in the locker room. We had a tradition in my room where right before the pregame speech, I would have my I would select a player. It was Johnny Dixon and Evan Spencer, Philly Brown, some guys, whoever that one guy was that I wanted to give that role, he would go give Urban a zone six sticker right before the game, and Urban would put it on his shoe. Every game, it was like a routine. Part of our routine as a unit, part of Urban's routine. And I also picked one game a year, and it was bizarre how it worked out, but there was one game a year where I would have them go take him a dog tag, the zone six dog tags, right? Against 2014, we didn't do it all year. We waited. And before the Alabama game, Evan Spencer took him a dog tag, and Urban said after the game, he was like, wow, like you talk about, I mean, I'm sitting here getting chills thinking
that's
about
awesome.
It.
That's awesome.
It's like, hey, and Evan went in and told him, he said, hey, coach, we wanted you to have this because we want to let you know our unit's going to lay it all on the field for you today. Fuck, I'm getting choked up thinking about
that's
it.
That's awesome.
It was so cool. And like Johnny Dixon gave it to him before Penn State 2 years ago, the double overtime OT. Thriller game. But somehow in that Oklahoma game in 2016, I guess.
The away game?
Yeah, the away game. Noah Brown gave it to him. It's just somehow, I don't know, it was like by chance, I guess. We picked a game to give it to him, and that game happened to be one of the signature wins of the season every time. But it was awesome. It was really cool.
Well, I'm sure you had a feeling.
Well, I mean, you knew it was a big game, but you didn't know we were going to have a great outcome. And my guys always played great after we gave him a damn dog tag. I'm like, shit, we should give him one every freaking week. But then Urban gave him a pregame speech, run out the tunnel. It's game time, man. Let's go. It was one of the coolest aspects of your job as a college football coach is all of that, the whole atmosphere. And really, the coolest part of your job is watching those kids go out on that stage and succeed. That's what you do it for, right? But that was a very in-depth dive into the week of a football coach. I hope you found it entertaining and informative. I'm going to post some stuff on Patreon just to back that up. I'll post a couple tip sheets. Definitely going to post that highlight video because I know you guys that are subscribers will want to see it. But I really wanted to just give you that insight. All right. Well, I know that took up the entirety of the show. I hope you enjoyed it. Hope that was a cool insider look into the life of a football coach. And I apologize we didn't get into some of the analytical stuff and some of the stories that I wanted to. But I felt like that was great content that you guys might want to hear. So next episode, we'll definitely dive into some Burt McMurphy stuff. And we're really going to move forward with the conference breakdowns, diving into the SEC next and then the Big 12 and so on. And also the offensive skill breakdown, just go through specifically the Big 10 and some national skill groups and where they rank, where they stack up. Also, in the next week or two, we're going to discuss the format and distribution and plans for this fall because we have some big plans, some awesome things coming, and we want to just go through it and just preview it so you have an idea of where this show's going to go moving into football season with some NFL stuff too. And also live show plans. I know I've been a part of a live show before. I've seen a live show. My grandfather did a live show forever. And so really have some cool things coming in that front. Have a couple venues we're in discussions with, and I'll let you know more about that later. And also just check out our Menace to Society store. We'll be launching Monday. Right now is the launch date, subject to change. But it's got some good apparel that's already rolled in and rolling in, and some stuff that's already been pre-ordered. So there'll be some pre-order opportunities next week on the storefront, and should be shipping within the next 2 weeks. I know Patreon members, your shirts will ship out end of this week. If you sign up for an All In or VIP membership and you get a shirt with that, they will ship out end of this week. So look for them next week. And then also we're going to have some Zone 6 stuff. It's going to be awesome. Some trash talk line. I also had a great meeting with one of my former players, Cato Mitchell, who does awesome custom apparel stuff. So we're going to have some stuff from him coming too. So if you're not a Patreon subscriber, subscribe now. Check us out. Support us. We also hit us up about sponsorship and advertising if you want. Sponsorship at MenaceSocietyPodcast.com. Hope you enjoyed the show. Hope you enjoyed the insight into the life of a college football coach. Hope you liked it. And if you didn't like it, as we say, go fuck yourself, San Diego. Menace to Society.